Hello and welcome to Easy Does It for Scorpio. The mid-year now autumn reading for Planet Waves. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, your friendly neighborhood astrologer here, for the next hour or so to catch you up on your planetary transits and talk a little bit about the times that we are in. So why don't we start there, exactly where we are. And by the way, that would be 1:38 in the morning on September 1st, a Monday, Labor Day. And thank you for joining me. So we are living in profoundly unstable and destabilizing times, and it's very difficult for many people to get through the day right now. And for some, there's no special reason why it should be so difficult to get through the day. You're not necessarily suffering from an illness or a mental illness, and you may have enough money in the bank. You're not worried about where next month's rent is coming from or how to buy groceries. And yet, even for people doing relatively well and better than that, it is a very stressful time to exist. And in my view, and I'm sure you've heard this a lot of times, this has a lot to do with the technology environment into which we have been thrust and what this does to individuals and what it is doing to society in total. We are experiencing destabilization. We are experiencing all forms of extremism, by which I mean introducing a chatbot that could consume all the water in the Colorado River is a very strange thing to be dealing with. And when there really is no such thing as the news anymore, where you simply have two options, one of which is to be completely overwhelmed, and the other one of which is to completely ignore everything. And I don't think that those are especially good options. And where it has become extremely difficult socially, you know, we're still living in the wake of the kind of the social media revolution of approximately 2009 and 2010. And it's like, this has created a lot of alienation. And, you know, people long for the relative civility of things like singles bars and gay bars, which only seem to exist at certain few places, if they exist at all. The generation gap has never been worse. I'm about to send out a letter to my subscribers asking for stories of generation gap and being estranged from your adult children, kids in their 30s and 40s, who are not talking to their parents anymore, causing great pain. We have barely recovered from the series of traumas that have seized our society. I would say going back to the 9/11 incident, which we never had a proper reckoning or healing from. We've never grieved that and what it did to our society, and leading the, you know, 19 years later, the 2020 crisis, we have not grieved that. Most people have not made any sense out of that scenario. And now here we find ourselves in 2025 on here in upstate New York, a beautiful Monday morning. And I know there's a lot of people wondering what the heck they're going to do with their lives and what seems to have happened to the future. What has happened to the concept of our potential? They have been taken. And I am here to use astrology to help you take some of it back. As Abby Hoffman said in Steal This Book, you're not really stealing, you're just stealing back. And in the spirit of that, let's consider your astrology. Now, before I turn the chart on, I want to just sum up by saying that in the course of 2025, we have had, at what is, by my reckoning, blinding speed and blind sighting, radical, overwhelming planetary transits. These match what's going on in society. It is a perfect match, in fact. The the speed of onset, the totality of the changes. I mean, all four gas giants, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, comprising 99% of the planetary mass of the solar system, four planets, all change signs within a matter of months. I know I have a book somewhere that might tell me whether that's ever happened before, Neil Mickelson's Planetary Phenomena. I'll have to look it up, but I've never seen anything, nor did I honestly understand that when I wrote the 2025 annual. I accounted for each of the transits individually, and then as it started to happen and I started to see how rapidly they just showed up all at once, and who was really expecting the flood the zone effect of the second Trump inauguration, of 100 executive orders signed in the first couple of days in a stadium as a show, just kind of rearranging the legal and bureaucratic framework of the United States in a matter of hours, all pre-written, pre-planned. Well, the astrology actually gives a good picture of this, but what the astrology does that a political analysis does not do. Let's make a little room for this. No, that's the wrong one. All right, here we are. What the astrology does that no political analysis can do, and let me just adjust my camera slightly so that I'm framed correctly. Nothing drives me crazier than not having a pencil in my hand when I'm reading and not being framed correctly in a video frame. Here, spoken as your friendly neighborhood photographer. So here we are. We have a picture of the chart. Now, one thing that I'm noticing, and I'm doing as much as I can to keep talking about, is the way that this structure predates the printing press by about 1900 years. This is a picture of the seasons. It's a picture of the view of the sky from space, including the parts of the sky we can't see below the horizon. But it's also a model of the psyche. It's a model of the personality that overlays with a model of society. And it is probably true that we contain some important parts of society within us. We do a lot of internalizing. We internalize through family. All the great psychoanalytic writers of the 20th century make us hip to this, the way we internalize all of these structures. And you could look at each one of the houses in this presentation as being about some internalized concept of what society is. We can proceed in that light. It's also important to remember that we're in a time when a lot of things are being exposed, and when things we have previously believed in the past, certain institutions that we believed in the past, are being exposed as having deceived us. Now, I'm not saying that the Earth is flat, but it's gotten so bad that you have people who are so detached from the physical reality of their body, that based on these incredibly destabilizing lies that we have been dragged through, the whole 2020 crisis, you know, if you don't have a list of at least five problems with that, then, you know, maybe read a couple of my articles. But we not only are reckoning with the pain of that, but those who are meekly awake are also having to reckon with the whole level of destabilization associated with the ways in which we were deceived. And so the edifice of many things is crumbling. And when the edifice of many things is crumbling, it is crucial to not fall for the idea that you are fake, that you are just some large language model that vomits out bullshit answers to questions and says exactly what people want to hear. Okay, so in remedy of the fact that it seems that everything in our society has changed, the structures have all changed, nothing is dependable, we can return to a structure that was laid out 2,500 years ago. That's how long back you can go, and you would still be able to basically recognize and read an astrology chart nearly 2,000 years before the printing press, and 2,300 years before radio. And so we're dealing with something that has a restorative quality and a recovery quality to it. And so before I populate these houses with planets, let's just like be grateful that this basic system of organization actually still holds, that there are 12 major categories in which you can fit your relationships to most of the things that you encounter in life. It's not just about 12 types of people. It's about in the form of the soul houses, which are indicated by signs in this system, where you find your internal references and what you find in your internal references. So for Scorpio and Scorpio rising, we have the chart that starts with the first house in the east. The east is to the left. And then we could write a book, really, but certainly a juicy book chapter without any planets in here at all. The solar house system works real good. The house systems work real good. And so maybe you don't really quite understand what I mean when I say I could easily write a 5,000 to 10,000 word book chapter about the blank wheel from the perspective of any sign. And that's because every sign orients on the total wheel differently. So if we were to go to Sagittarius, everything changes. You know, for example, with Scorpio, your ninth house is indicated by the sign Cancer. But if we turn the chart one sign and we start with Sagittarius, your ninth house is indicated by Leo, and everything else changes as well. It's a whole different chart, even though the planets may be situated within the same signs. So we're going to look at this chart from your viewpoint, from the viewpoint of Scorpio, Scorpio rising, Scorpio moon, and Chiron in Scorpio. I think it's very important to know where your Chiron is and to learn a little bit about it. It's easy to find out. And I can point you to reliable reading materials. So let's take a look at what's going on in your chart right now. And this is somewhat minimized. We've got your ruling planet, Mars, in the 12th house here. So let's add that in. Let's make that Mars' favorite color, which is red. And Mars is going through town. And Mars will be out of Scorpio in about 3 weeks, out of Libra, and going into your sign in 3 weeks. I'll be covering that in the horoscope of the monthly, particularly the monthly horoscope for October that I'm writing this week. Okay, so when we look at the Scorpio chart, first of all, there's this very important influence that is right in your sign. And sometimes it's good to know right exactly what's in your sign. And then I'm going to read everything around your sign, because that's how you get a real reading. That's the difference, right? It's not just reading in. I'm looking at the entire sky using a consistent set of points that I've selected for this reading. And what we see is that you're a very powerful attractor right now. You are a charismatic activator of social involvement, business involvement, improvement and movement of many different kinds. The point is called Apollon. It's one of the special points without a body. I feel like I'm the last of the Mohicans of astrologers who read this, and there's very few astrologers doing sun signs. I don't think there's any, frankly. And most of them don't even tell you what they're reading. But I'm saying you got Apollon in your first house. And this means that you have to do a little more being than doing to get the response that you want and need to get, which is very good because you have other places where you need to be more doing than being, where there's more activity that is being summoned. But you personally are a powerful personal attractor, and this is going to be here for a long time. It's not going anywhere fast. This is the foreseeable future, perhaps the remainder of your natural life, and it's here now in Scorpio. Apollon, Apollon, I believe. Very slow mover. The other major thing, for Scorpio, let's cover something first. I was going to talk about Aries and the nature of Aries. Let's talk about the scenario with your relationships, which I have been tracking very carefully through all the annual editions, all the weekly and monthly horoscopes, with some exceptions, going back well over 7 years to 2018. And it was back in 2018, which was in itself a very destabilizing year, that Uranus entered Taurus. And this is difficult for generally Luddite Tauruses who are not into progress and advancement and rapid change and who prefer stability and who prefer their natural relationship to their body instead of having like AirPods and earbuds and all this stuff plugged into their head. And as I once said of Taurus, your old radio is just as good as any new radio. Not even realizing the joke of that was, who's got a radio? What radio? Your old, if you're a Taurus, your old radio is just as good as a new radio. But suddenly, what we had was, with Taurus in Taurus, and then any way that Taurus affects anyone, a lot of very rapid movement, and Uranus represents the electrical environment, and that, too, moving very, very rapidly. Very rapidly. And not easy for anyone. And for you, what it did was it upset the natural order of your relationships. I would suggest checking back to basically 2017 through 2019 and asking yourself what exactly was going on and what and who was going on in your relationships, and like, have you accounted for the degree of instability in that time? Now, politically, it was a very unstable time. There was rampant politicization of relationships between men and women, as if there's no biology to the relationships between men and women. Well, you know, you're a Taurus, the other Taurus, Scorpio, and your relationship house is Taurus, and these are physical hormonal signs. This is where we find basically the meatiest portions of meat space, as a physical space used to be called by cybernauts. And you require physical moorings and physical orientations in your environment. And what we saw with Uranus moving in to your seventh house was the incursion of non-physical, largely electrical stuff, and the influence of the digital environment, the influence of the electronic environment generally influencing and destabilizing the culture of your relationships along with the rest of society. It's been pretty rough. And since we've been through so much together so fast, it's not really easy to see that we used to be swimming around in a river with a clear water. And then like the Chicago River, on St. Patrick's Day, you know, someone dumps a 50 pounds of green dye and turns the river green, and after a while, you forget the previous color that the river was. And I can't believe they still do this in Chicago. This is for real. I mean, as of a couple of years ago, they still were like dumping hundreds of pounds of green dye into the river to make it look green. Well, we're now living in this green river that no one remembers when the river was any other color. And the destabilizing factor in your relationships over the past 7 years has had a profound influence on your relationships and your expectations. And it seems to have had an influence on partners. And part of that influence was not being able to count on anyone being stable. There is a massive flake factor. And the most important thing you can do about that flake factor is to not participate in it. Do not be flaky and call people out of their flakiness. Now, I'm talking about a transit that began in 2018, and it may be a little late if you've gone through 7 years of being like, well, they're flaky, I'm going to be flaky. You know what? It's never too late to ground yourself in reality and to thread the needle of being like reminding yourself that you set the example for the world around you, even though sadly many people don't follow it, a good few people do, of stabilizing yourself and making sure that you are the most stable force in your environment, that if you want a world where people are reliable, the first thing you have to do is to be a reliable person. If you want a world where people are honest, the first thing you have to do is to be an honest person. If for no other reason, then you have no right to ask people to be stable, respectful, and honest if you're not stable, respectful, and honest. And yes, it's true, there are many people who don't really care how hypocritical they are, especially in our times when all that matters is power. I have the power. I do it because I can. And this is going on in ways large and small. And this is a very important thing to, like, dispense with. Dispatch it. Life is not about the power that you have. Paul McCartney is right, at least in principle, that the love you make is equal to the love you take. And we could even invert that and say, well, you know, what have you given, as The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot ends? What have we given? What have you given? And so I'm suggesting that in our increasingly destabilized times, that you orient yourself on giving and that you unplug that part about getting and having, because the chances are that it's strong enough in you that you get and you have plenty and you don't have to worry about any more getting and having than you already have. And what we need to take care of are the people first and foremost in our immediate vicinity, and that includes our immediate online vicinity, and you know who is nearby in any sense. That said, the lack of stability may continue in some ways, but there's going to be a change as Uranus now makes a transition from Taurus into Gemini. And there's some adaptability there. You know, Gemini is generally much more adaptable than Taurus is. And there's certainly an acceleration going on with Uranus and Gemini. It is going to accelerate the technical environment faster than anything that we have ever seen accelerate the technical environment. And is leading you also to need to make sure that you continue to be or consecrate yourself as a stabilizing force in the element of your relationships where there is actually an exchange. So the eighth house where Uranus is going is going to be this kind of mediating factor in a house where there's all this inbound energy. I mean, and the way this works is, when you marry someone in the seventh house, you get all their in-laws in the eighth house. When you marry someone in the seventh house, you then encounter all the matters of sex, death, money, power, jealousy, secrets, control, surrender, shared resources of the eighth house. And so here comes Uranus. And, Uranus is the original planet of the only constant is change, and then that said, the change can be very turn down the AC a little bit. The change can be very abrupt and unexpected. And it's important that, for example, if you're an investor, that you hedge your bets. Because there's a lot about investing that happens in the eighth house, and a lot about money, but a lot about the exchange of resources. So one thing you want to make sure that you do in this time, if you're honest, in the eighth, going into the eighth, it's going to go back into Taurus in a little while, and then come back into Gemini, is make sure you have your own stuff. Make sure you have some of your own money as apart from any partnership that you're in. If you have property, make sure you have some of your own property. And if you are in a situation where you have shared property with another person, make sure that sharing is both contractually consecrated to be stable, and that you have an assessment of whether the actors involved are acting in good faith. Because the only thing the only thing between you and quite a bit of instability is going to be clear agreements and people honoring them in good faith. And so the shakeup moves from certain physical and domestic aspects of your relationship into the shared resources angle, what Ben Franklin would have called the death and taxes angle here in the eighth house. And you have to be the master of your affairs. But while you're busy being the master of your affairs, you need to make sure that you treat people fairly and that you keep your cynicism under control. Scorpio is given to cynicism. It is very unhealthy. It is defeatist. It is self-defeatist. And it will take people down around you in a time when people are very fragile and they need help in the ways that you excel. And what may also be true is that you need help in the ways that they excel. And so Scorpio is deeply encrypted, that's the sign, with the exchange of resources. And what I suggest that you do is that you be the fair treasurer of the resources and do absolutely no plundering and no exploiting and not make excuses for plundering or exploiting in any way. You probably don't need $1,000 boots. And if you're going to have $1,000 boots, they should be boots that last for 10 years that get you through the rain and the snow, not the boots that you wear twice. So you really need to think about your resource allocation. And now let's talk about what you do. Let's talk about what you do. So let's have a little feminist critique here. The essence of the feminist argument, particularly of the past half century, is that women can have it all. And no one's going to pay the price. And you'll be just as satisfied. You'll have no conflict over any of this. There'll be no division in your life or in your family. There'll be no sense of internal competition. You won't be neglecting anything. And what I, as someone who spends a fair amount of time listening and having exchanges with older ladies, is that really wasn't so true after all. Oh, I believed all that liberationist stuff of the 1970s. Oh, and now it turns out that none of it really panned out. And by the way, the liberationist agenda of the 1970s was just a repackaging of, we've got to get women into the workforce to start charging them income tax, because we've got a large portion of the population that's not paying income tax let's tax everyone. And this was then, well, it's always been packaged as a form of equality and of liberation, but let's be honest about the fact that giving women access to the workplace and to capital served a much larger, more pernicious purpose that we could easily call, there are a few things that qualify the patriarchy, and the patriarchy, we could say, is the thing that just takes your money and your time and your love and your soul. But it's not really the patriarchy. It's something else. And what I'm getting at here is that you've probably reached a point in life where you need to make a reevaluation. And what is distinctive about the charts for Scorpio right now is the potential emphasis on professional activity. Now, this will be two different things, whether or not you're retired, whether or not you have children at home, whether or not you're married. But in any event, time and resources analysis would be worthwhile. I'm not saying you can or can't do anything. I am suggesting that a time and resources analysis would be very helpful so that you have some connection with the impact of your choices on yourself and on your environment. And the whole thing we were sold, all of us, including me as a child growing up in the 70s, in this environment where, whether it was at home or at school or in the news or university, places I worked, the rallying cry for equality was quite loud, is okay, and then what happened? How did this work? And so on the personal level, I'm suggesting that you do a time and resources analysis as you make irrevocable decisions. As you make irrevocable decisions. And it is very sad to say that among young people, it would seem like among a fairly large percentage of them, the only purpose they can see in a relationship with someone has got something to do with economic stability and very little to do with sexual connection, an idealization of love of some kind. It's been stripped down to the bare skeleton of resources. Now, that is the story of the eighth house, sex, death, money, power. The eighth is where we merge resources. But with Uranus and Gemini in there, that's not going to be so simple. But let's look at the firehouses, like engine 3, ladder 1. That's actually be engine 6 and ladder 10. Because the 6 is an engine, and the 10th is kind of a ladder. And they are the places where, among two, that you have fire in your chart. Fire sign Leo shows up at the very top in the 10th place, has another one of those special points in there. That's Vulcanus. And house number 6, where you work, the workaday world of the 6th place, has all of this activity. Now, one thing I want to say about Scorpio is that you are blessed, and you may not feel this way, but you are blessed with being less aspirational and more occupational. That your success, that you don't necessarily measure your success in how high you have gone on the corporate ladder or the social ladder, you are more likely to measure your success based on what you produce, what you get done, what you make. And it turns out that the house of what you produce and what you make has got a lot going on. This is place 6, and basically it includes work, wellness, and service. Work and service have a lot in common, but a lot of people's work is different from their service, which is why I mention them differently. work, wellness, service. And because you have Aries here, and by now you may be familiar with my theory of the solar chart, and we'll work this way in the natal chart as well, but especially in the solar chart where we need as many reference points as possible because we don't have the natal reference points, the placement of the signs in the houses become a very important stand-in for the natal planets. I'm going to move a little closer here, pardon me, while I adjust this. No, going the wrong way. Okay, let's go there. My sculpture by Jim is appearing. Jim Dowd. I'll introduce the artists at the end of the video. Work, wellness, and service, your sixth, are distinctly connected with Aries, the sign that says, I am. Aries is where you find, you locate your sense of I am. You in the map of consciousness known as the chart, where Aries falls is where you're most likely to seek self-actualization. And for most people, the sixth is where they go to work every day. Which means to me that your sixth place, that is to say, where you go to work every day, must be something that feeds your self-actualization and not merely your sense of power and importance and your money and all this stuff. There has to be a crucial element of being able to grow as a person in the work you do. This is laughingstock for most people. What do you mean? Grow in my work. I sell insurance. My growth is just measured in my production every month. How many clients I signed, the sales volume. And this is true of many jobs. There's some metric other than your personal sense of development. But this is now inevitable. There's no getting around this. Because when you activate a house to the extent that the sixth is being activated by 6 points. Well, you can't see one of them. I'm gonna draw it in here. It's called Salacia. That's about 10 to 12 degrees right now. I'm moving pretty quick. 6 points. None of them asteroids. All of them slow movers. The quickest of them is Chiron, which takes 50.7 years to go around the zodiac, and which is spending 9 years in Aries. This is a while. And what this is doing, particularly, let's talk about Chiron, is activating the theme of the sixth house, which is about healing and wellness, and much less about work. Because for most people, the sixth is simply where they go to the office and where they go to somebody else's office, like the doctor's office. But that doctor's office has to kind of dissolve in a way, and then you essentially are always in your healing space. That's the concept of the sixth at its best. But let's just say, forgetting about the physical space, which is important for any house, that the theme, the dominant theme of your life is a theme of dedicating yourself to your healing process, to your growth process, to your self-actualization process. All of that, sixth, Aries plus Chiron. And long before Chiron got there, long before Saturn, long before Neptune, long before Salacia, Eris was there. Eris makes its way in from about 1920 to 1927. It takes 7 years to go from Pisces into Aries. It moves that slowly, and its orbit is that weird. It got to go back and forth like 6 times. So basically, we're looking at Eris and Aries going back a century, pretty much. Everyone alive has Eris in Aries from their birth. And what that is this electrical, electronic, digital haze that we have all been in because all of our lives we've been exposed to wall-to-wall mass media, radio, if we're old enough, television, high-definition television, cable television, and then the entire onslaught of the digital environment, not to mention telephone, a very important part of our lives even today. And this has had an effect on us. And the way that you find out about the effect is you change something that, and something gets a different result. And the thing indicating the change is Chiron moving through Aries. And right now, Chiron is in a conjunction with Uranus in Aries. And this is about the form of healing and self-actualization known as waking up and paying attention. Waking up and paying attention. Coming out of the digital haze. Haze you would not know that you were in until at some point you came out of the spell. And so this is not likely to be too comfortable. This is about recognizing that not only is the environment overwhelming, but that you cannot avoid it anymore. You cannot just pretend that this, whatever the influences of this overwhelming flood the zone, mass media, telephone, radio, television, high definition television, the digital environment, and then all the things that come with the digital environment, that you are suddenly being shocked out of this. And the options would seem to be, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening, how bad it is, I'm going to stick my head back in the sand. Well, at that point, you're not going to be able to breathe, and you might wonder how it is that you breathe for so long with your head in the sand previously. Or your other option is to wake up and start paying attention and start making decisions and realize that the thing that has most likely been stunted by the presence of Eris and Aries, which represents something, a planetary transit is completely meaningless unless it actually represents something. And the key is to understand what it represents and what it can potentially represent, and then to work with those potentials. And what I see with Chiron conjunct Eris is basically self-actualization, which comes in the form of awakening from all of the influences that all of these different overlaid, piled-on-top environments have had on you. And this is not about going and getting rid of your phone. It's not about turning off anything. It's about being aware of your situation. It's about waking up and saying, where am I? Who am I? And what am I doing here? And the questions, what am I, where am I, who am I, and what am I doing here, are the ones that are the most dependably suppressed by the digital and the electronic environment. The digital and the electronic environment completely take over the whole who am I, where am I thing. Because you're always everywhere, because on the internet you're everywhere, and you're always nobody, because in electrical environments, you are part of a phony electronic tribe. And as part of a phony electronic tribe, you can't be anyone. That's why there's no privacy. That's why everyone knows exactly what you do. That's why your hut has no side. Everyone can look right in your hut. There's no auditory privacy. Anything you say can be heard unless you venture out into the forest. With someone, and the question then becomes, what were you doing in the forest? This is the awakening. And so as part of the awakening, you would turn back inward and ask yourself what resources that you still have available to you. Turning inward, that is the nature of Chiron in Aries conjunct Eris. And this needs to be a big theme of the 2026 annual. turning inward. I've said this a lot of times, but I haven't said it quite like that. Chiron conjunct Eris. I'm going to use these. This is how I take my notes. Okie dokie. So, next, expect the healing process to come through and an awakening process. Meanwhile, Saturn and Neptune are still working their way into Aries. That process completes in February when they make a conjunction. But this is providing impulse, neither of those are impulsive, impetus. It's providing resources. It is providing perhaps a form of inspiration, but also connection with necessity. And what happens when you blend Saturn and Neptune, you're always dealing with that connection of necessity and inspiration, of practicality and idealism that work together. Practicality and idealism that work together. And that's very difficult to get practicality and idealism working together. Now, Borsisi is also there. Borsisi, approximately 290-year orbit, and it also has all of those elements of idealism and practicality and religious beliefs and scientific findings, where they clash, when science lies and we believe it, when religion tells the truth and we don't believe it, or any various forms of vice versa. But Borsisi has a lot to do with the way that we navigate and negotiate between truth and lies. The most important truth or lie is the one about who you are. Who are you? And in the world of deep fake, are you a deep fake? Because that is the message of the medium of the land of deep fake is, are you real? Why or why not? So you could say that self-actualization is about the process of self becoming actual, and then you awaken to who you always were. That's true self-actualization. It's not so much becoming as it is discovering, and then through the process of discovering, there's a kind of a special becoming that happens. Finally, so my take is that Saturn and Neptune represent resources and combination of idealism and necessity, but mostly resources. And the awakening part is coming from Chiron and Eris. Chiron and Eris. Now, where did my little trusty triangle go? The thing that I draw straight lines with, which suddenly I need. All right, let's forget about that. Let's just use a pencil. Sure, I was used the right tool for the job. I've never used a pencil as a ruler before. And really, well, let's see, not that good. Really wanting to point to this, to Salacia. And it kind of brings in these points here. Eventually they're going to catch up. So it's not totally wrong. I'm a little OCD about my charts being right, even these casual handwritten charts. So just know that this is pointing to Salacia. And look, it may be coming through the filter of Saturn. Let's work with that. And the reason I say that is because, first of all, what Salacia is, in the sixth house, Salacia represents sexual healing. Sexual healing is a concept that few people have any reference points for, except Marvin Gaye song, which is, come over and I'll fuck you, and that's sexual healing, and that's not actually what I'm talking about. Nothing of the kind. In fact, that is on the risky side for you, but you're probably not the hookup type. But I as much as I love Marvin Gaye, who was gay, I guess, the concept that sexual healing would be completely occupied by a song is kind of like the Age of Aquarius being occupied by boom, ba-doom, boom, boom, ba-doom. This is the dawning of when the moon is in the seventh house, which it is for 2 hours every day, and Jupiter aligns with Mars, which it does like twice or three, four, five times a year. That's supposed to be the dawning of the age of Aquarius? It's just more bullshit. There is such a thing as sexual healing. And you are likely to be waking up to needing some of that. And if you are, the next thing is you're likely to be waking up to not knowing where to go, not knowing what to do about this, not knowing how to even define the concept. But let's at least let it be there. And my delineation of Stellatia, which you'll not find anyplace else, there's not a lot of delineations of Stellatia, but you're going to get all kinds of basically jetsam and flotsam. My delineation of Stellatia is the sex and relating that are appropriate for you. There is no LGBTQ, and even if there were, it wouldn't include heterosexual men. So as long as you want a political theory that does not include heterosexual men who happen to be very important to nature and society and the well-being of all of our lives, then the LGBTQ flag is the flag to hoist out your window. But it could just as well be the go away men flag, go away heterosexual men flag. You probably don't believe that. Probably have no use for that. You probably like heterosexual men, and you have your favorite, even if you don't like them all, you've got your favorite heterosexual man. Well, so be aware that in the age of, here in the age of totally politicized sex, sexual healing itself is going to be politicized, and a lot of people flock to this whole rainbow flag thing, thinking it offers them something besides political rationalization for how they feel and what they think. Do you need political rationalization? Now, the way we see this is that Stellatia and soon to be Saturn are square this group, which I call the Hunger Games group, the family Hunger Games group. And I indicate it by red in all of my charts. And I'm going to extend this now down to Saturn, because Saturn's going to get there in 2026. It's going to get there real quick. Neptune is not. But Neptune has a big wide orb. But Saturn's going to get there and put some pressure on this group. And this is the group that is conditioning everything about what you're supposed to believe about yourself, particularly as a sexual being. And even if that meant that you're of the age where you come out to your parents and it's a big dramatic thing, which it's not anymore. In fact, 10 years ago, South Park spoofed parents pretending that their children were gay to be proud of them and to help them come out. Tweek and Craig, this is worth watching. The whole thing where Tweek and Craig, who were always kind of being turned into the target of something, were made into the target of all the adults were so proud because somebody drew pictures of them having an affair, which they were not homosexual kids, and they knew they were not homosexual kids. So this is all political conditioning. It's all just more examples of political conditioning. And what I'm getting at here is that political conditioning is a feature of family life. First and foremost, Reich and many others have pointed this out. The political conditioning starts first in the family. Charity begins in the home, and so does government. No, charity should begin in the home, and government should not begin in the home, but it does. As Reich said, the family is the authoritarian miniature state that teaches people how to comply. And Reich's theory of sexual repression, I think, is very interesting. Wilhelm Reich, who people love or love to hate, or who have never heard of, Reich's theory of sexual repression, which again, I'm going to preface by saying this is brilliant, has nothing to do with morality or the claimed morality of sexuality. It is rather for the convenience of the parents that their children not be fully alive, active, curious, creative people. And the way to make them not fully alive, active, creative, curious people is to suppress their aliveness, which means suppressing their curiosity and their sexuality and their creativity, because we all know those kids are easier to manage. And this happened to most of us. In one way, shape, or form, this happened to most of us. I'm fortunate that I was neglected enough. The me that you see is largely the product of having been neglected as a child, that nobody bothered to tell me who I shouldn't be and what I shouldn't do. And my parents had a touch of open-mindedness, but the reality is they kind of didn't give a shit. So I had to manage myself and manage my evolution as a person in relationships and all that. Most people, not that lucky. Most people, their parents and or the pastor, all took some unhealthy interest in their lives and attempted to shape you, to shape you into something. And that shaping was the shaping of your sexual perception, your sexual consciousness, your relational orientation, how you relate to others emotionally, which led to what the situation that most people are in, which is that they found a mode of sexuality that has nothing to do with whether, and by that I mean sexual relational orientation. The whole thing is one caboodle, how you relate to others emotionally, relationally, and sexually. And I maintain that the the rainbow flag actually should look like that Chris Hawkins painting, because there ain't no stripes. And people who believe that they fit into one of the stripes, well, what's going on inside the stripe? And what I'm saying is, though the chances are you're probably not like LGBTQIA affiliated, though be normal to 15% will be, maybe being a little queer myself, I attract a couple of queers in, a couple of extras. Nonetheless, your concept of what it meant to be queer was shaped by governmental and parental forces. This is the whole point of Tweaking Craig. One of the most unnerving South Park sequences is the Tweaking Craig being gay. And this is the point, is there's all of this pressure to be queer. And then it's not okay to not be, it's so, bah. But even if you are heterosexual, Susie Q, or whatever, the point is that all of the expectations are piled on you, and these are cultural societal expectations. I blew some fire in the spirit of Burning Man, spit some fire back at the conservative forces that are saying, well, the answer to all this woke LGBTQ stuff, all this woke therapy stuff, is just to impose, go back to imposing monogamy, compulsory monogamy and heterosexuality on people. I'm like, no, bro. I'm with you so far up to that point. It's not about imposing another agenda, but the other agenda is coming. There's astrology here, I swear to God, that this is the imposition of agenda down the generations, conveyed by alcohol and douchebags who don't care about right and wrong, that exists somewhere in the family culture. And third house is quite young, by the way. Third house, for the third house, you need to take an inventory of people going back to when you were a toddler. Now, I realize that that's not necessarily that easy. So for age influence, Melanie Reinhardt very cleverly said, the third house is what you bump into when you're crawling around on the floor. So we can go back to what you were bumping into, and don't forget how wonderful the dogs and the cats were. The third house is also local influence, local neighborhood influence, the influence of siblings. I would add close cousins, sibling-like cousins, and then the influence of school. Third house, very much about lower school. And the clash is Salacia, what's appropriate for you, has been rubbing up against all these in this 90-degree angle. And now Saturn's going to come, and Saturn at least is going to help you define your own bottom line. You've got to decide, this is me talking, and don't let me tell you what to do, but let me tell you what to do. In my view, you've got to define what's right for you. What else are you going to do? If you're not defining what's right for you, somebody else is going to define what's right for you. But here's the catch. In the 1970s model of defining what was right for you, it was okay to just tell everyone to go fuck off and die. And this happened in a lot of families. And I would say that given your relational nature, the first thing you want to do is have a conversation with someone without a decision having been made. Because you have to be able to... People need to be given a chance to adapt to your new reality. And there are some terrible habits in relationship, like leaving the relationship 2 years before you announce that you're leaving it, and then people just check out 2 years ahead of time, and then they blindside their partner because they never said, listen, I got a problem. I got an issue. I got to solve this. I don't understand this. I'm trying to figure this out about myself. So who are you inside that relationship? And leave room. You've been pushed plenty over the past 7 years. You've been pushed plenty with other people making you adjust to their reality. And I'm saying as you wake up to your reality, you could be a little more humane maybe than you've been treated and, you know, invite people into the conversation. I realize Scorpio is one of the most secretive of the signs, but you could be a little more like the Queen of Cups and be a little more empathetic. By the way, we see a whole sexual healing kind of necessity in Nessus in the fifth, a very sexual house. And Nessus is basically investigating the consequences of what would have happened. So the fifth is about, the fifth is generally about sex play. It's play because this is the fifth, is the house of play. And also the house of sex. And also the house of pleasure generally, and Nessus is there. Nessus is about consequences. And so the question is, what consequences have you wrought? Which consequences have other people's actions had on you? And are you carrying trauma that's preventing you from experiencing life? Or because Pisces is very much about experience life, and are you carrying trauma that is setting up negative expectations that are preventing you from actually enjoying your remaining time on Earth? Because trauma can't be an excuse, and being a victim can't be an excuse. And sadly, the liberation, quote, liberation, which should be warning quotes, or better yet, warning quotes, movements of the 70s were all about victimization. Claiming your role as a victim, conscious victimization, that is the stupid, dumbass shadow side of Nessus. With Nessus, you could be honest about the consequences that have come your way. With Nessus, you can be honest about what you have potentially done to people. And it, even though it's the calling people up to apologize is not a very Scorpio thing. Ooh, this one keeps coming up. A very Scorpio thing, you may have a couple of people you want to call and say, look, I'm really sorry that things happened the way that they did. And by the way, if there's anything that I can do to mitigate this, I realize it's been 25 years since I screwed you over, but is there anything I can do to mitigate this? And please accept my sincerest apologies. And can I make you dinner or something else? To reckon that, because consequences of all kinds are highlighted by Nessus. Consequences of all kinds are highlighted, and this is Nessus is the big what goes around comes around. But you know, since the days of Oprah, when the only thing that mattered in the Oprah age is how big of a victim you could be. This was the most pernicious influence of Oprah, was making victims rich. Making victims rich. There's a better way. And in the fifth, you want to play. You want to have fun. You want to get naked in the fifth house. Whether you're going to get naked and squish your toes in the mud or make whoopee or whatever, climb a mountain and have some fun, the fifth, and this is Pisces style, you know, this little sex, drugs, and rock and roll in Pisces. Nessus is inviting you to flip that script and to flip the script by insisting as a factor of maturity that you are accountable for your actions, because you're not a self-actualized person till you are. All right, I could go on, but I will. I reckon there will be a Scorpio birthday reading. That's far enough in the future that this one will be in the past, and then there will be the 2026, as yet unnamed 2026, unnamed annual. I'm thinking something like First Light, or something like Island to the Future, or something like Of Human Born. I'm kind of down to those three: First Light, Islands of the Future, and Of Human Born as my titles for the written 2026 annual. All right, listen, thank you. It's been a pleasure doing this. I was off to a little slow start, but then I started to get wound up into it. And, you know, there's more to say here. One thing to say is work with faith and make long-term plans. Fuck this whole thing about there is no future and there is no potential. You have a future. You have potential. So get with yourself. Please keep your subscription to Planet Waves active. We need every subscriber we can get right now. That's the little monthly thing that makes sure that I'm here between these readings. Thank you for your business and your trust. Please tell your dog, your cat, your donkey, or your goat that I said hi. And bye for now.